T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus. Steve, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, good to have you with us. Steve, you know, yesterday we had a conversation. We were talking about the three players on the Browns with the most to prove this season. And I guess, you know, you could define that in a few different ways. But I went with Baker being one of the three, just in terms of proving some consistency as a frontline quarterback. But then I also went with Odell and Jadeveon Clowney to try to kind of prove that the last couple of seasons of injuries, you know, they could bounce back from that. Do you think those are all fair? And when you look at the Browns, I mean, we're kind of throwing this at you, but who do you look at? Who do you think of when you think of guys that have something to prove on the Browns?
No, I definitely think those are good options. Of course, with Baker, you know, I think from my perspective, we saw one of the better rookie seasons we've seen from any quarterback in recent years. We saw a disappointing 2019. We saw a disappointing start to 2020, and then a great finish for Baker. So I think, you know, it's not a massive roller coaster, but there's been ebbs and flows to his development. So I think seeing that consistency from start to finish, I think, will be huge for him. I think Odell Beckham is easily the first guy that comes to mind, though. I mean, we saw the offense obviously succeed without him last year. We saw a 2019 season where he and Baker were just not on the same page, and it has not been the same OBJ that we saw with the New York Giants. So I think he has a ton to prove there. And Clowney's he's an easy one, too, just because the sack totals have been so low the last couple of years, even though I think he'll bounce back. And then the other name that comes to mind is, of course, PFF favorite Wyatt Teller, you know, having the breakout season last year, outstanding in the run game, and just seeing if he could maintain that here, you know, again, for one more year.
Yeah, speaking of Clowney, what do you expect of him? How poorly has he played over the last couple of seasons? I know the numbers have not been there, but you guys watch every snap of this guy. I mean, is he still have that potential?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, what I think we do really well at PFF is isolate that snap-by-snap performance. Now, look, he's coming off of his lowest pass rush grade that we've seen since 2015. So he wasn't great last year, but the difference in his performance last year or basically back to 2015, it's not a massive drop-off. It's not as massive as it looks on paper, where his sack totals went from, I think it was 9 to 4.5 or 3, you know, to 0, right? So, you know, using the old traditional stats, it looks like, man, here's a guy that used to have 7 to 10 sacks every single year. Now he had, four, you know, 3.5, 4.5, and none. Therefore, he's fallen off a cliff. I think his actual snap-by-snap production has been a lot closer than those numbers would indicate. He's never been a great pass rusher, but I think if he performs at a similar level as he did in 2019 with the Seahawks, which I think is reasonable, by our numbers, a 76 pass rush grade, which is good and solid. If he does that with this Browns defensive line, he'll have 8 or 9 sacks. I mean, he'll be up in that range, because you've got Myles Garrett and a couple of other options there to help out. So I think Clowney will be fine and have a good season. That'll look like a nice bounce back for him.
Steve, You mentioned, we talked about Odell there for a second, and, you know, how he's been down here in Cleveland, and the offense was better when he was out last year. You said you have faith in Clowney kind of bouncing back. Do you have that same faith in Odell? And if he doesn't do it this year, do you feel like it's over in terms of him being a top wide receiver?
If he doesn't do it this year, I definitely have my concerns going forward. I think, yeah, obviously I do have faith in him, because there was a point in his career when, you know, when you're looking at receivers, it's like, all right, what does this guy do well? And I think that's kind of the beauty of evaluating receivers in the NFL, is good coaches can put guys in position to succeed and play to their strengths. Well, Odell Beckham had strengths everywhere. He could do it all. You could throw screens to him. He'd create after the catch. He could take a slant to the house, which he did all the time for Eli Manning. He could win down the field with his route running or with his contested catch ability. Obviously, all the spectacular catches that we've seen through the years. So he could really do it all. And I think that ability and I could absolutely see him bouncing back. I think my concern was the way things went in 2019. I know the whole offense was out of sync. It just chemistry-wise between Baker and Odell, it just didn't seem great. And I just don't have enough information if that was a them type of thing or if that was a Freddie Kitchens offense and just the whole team was a mess that year. So I just need to see more information. But obviously, OBJ's got the talent. It's all there. He could do anything that you ask of him and would not be surprised if he bounced back pretty strong as well.
Why do you think Baker did get better last year once Odell went down? I mean, you guys watched it every single snap, every single game. We watched it too. It seemed like Baker got more comfortable. You know, we don't know what was going on inside the locker room, just like you don't know. But was there something you saw that changed with Baker?
Yeah, I think part of it was natural progression within the offense. You know, it was a new system for him. So whether OBJ mm-hmm. was there or not, you get that. And then I think with quarterbacks, it's this weird dynamic through the years where – you know, like Julio Jones is out on the market right now. Every team should want Julio Jones. But we've seen quarterbacks through the years lose Julio-caliber receivers and get better, or at least maintain their ability. So Matthew Stafford loses Calvin Johnson, and he's fine. He's okay. Even Deshaun Watson last year loses DeAndre Hopkins. And then I think you just kind of relax a little bit. You don't worry about your star receiver. I think there is that element, but it's not clean across the board because, obviously, DeAndre Hopkins helped Kyler Murray quite a bit. So it's not as simple as, you know, this receiver is overrated and you don't need him. But there was something to Mayfield's game where he was not pressing as much. He was playing within the system. And I think comfort level just got so much better as the year went on.
Speaking of Julio, Steve, we've talked about some of the teams where he could make a big impact, including some teams we'd like him not to go to, like the Ravens. But, you know, we've talked about the Dolphins and some other teams. Are the Ravens the team he can make the biggest impact on out of the teams that he might end up on, or do you have another in mind?
To me, I look at the AFC South. I think the Ravens are definitely up there. They've made some strides as far as drafting Rashad Bateman and bringing in Sammy Watkins. But I think the teams that need him the most are probably the Colts or the Titans. You know, the Titans have A.J. Brown. They lost Corey Davis. They don't really have another receiving option. And I just don't want to see what Ryan Tannehill does without better weapons because, you know, he's got a career of just being pretty good. And the last couple of years, he's been excellent with his good weapons. And I think the Colts, same thing with Carson Wentz. The Colts just, they don't have a great receiving core. They've got a couple decent players. They need to support Carson Wentz, who's always had good offensive line play until last year. The one year he had excellent receiver play, they go to the Super Bowl. So I think Carson Wentz needs Julio the most. And the Ravens, yeah, they're up there as well. Like I said, they've made some strides, but if they added Julio, we would learn a lot about the Ravens, and they would just have more ways to win instead of just relying on that run game. And I think that would be the biggest help in Baltimore if Julio went there.
You know, speaking of that run game, is that the Falcons' game plan? They drafted Pitts, you know, their number one pick. They've got Hayden Hurst there. They've got good running attack. Obviously, their new coach comes in, Arthur Smith, known for the running game. Are they going to try to take a page out of Kevin Stefanski's playbook?
But who's their back?
Yeah, well, it's
Mike Davis.
It doesn't matter. They're built. Yeah, they're building their team the way we would at PFF, which is like let's do all the other pieces first, and then slot the back in there. But I think they realize obviously they're not going to have Derrick Henry. Arthur Smith's not going to have him. I do think the run game is going to be a big component. I think you're going to see, hey, Arthur Smith has this track record. He took Ryan Tannehill, who was, the 15th, 20th best quarterback in the NFL for the majority of his career, and made him into one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL over the last 2 years. So there's probably this confidence in the system, in establishing the run game, working play action. He does great with that. I still would love to just see Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Kyle Pitts on the field at the same time.
We're
not going to really live out that dream, but on paper it would have been great, with those guys. And we'll see what they can get for Julio, though.
We're talking with Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus. Obviously, another name that's been talked about a lot in trades is Aaron Rodgers. And, you look at some of the – well, before we get to that, I was going to say, I one of the team that to me I think would be fascinating is if he got traded to Miami, especially if after I heard, I don't know if you heard, did you hear the comments from Tua yesterday where he said he didn't really know the playbook well last year?
Did not hear that. That's
okay. Well, I mean, he said that. Yeah, I mean, it blew my mind, and you know, I don't know if Green Bay's interested in Tua or whatever, but where do you look at as a good spot? Because I think Miami makes a lot of sense for. I mean, obviously Denver too. What do you think, Steve?
Those are the two teams I've looked at. Denver, definitely. Miami, in part because not only have they built a lot of the offensive structure, well, both sides of the ball, the roster has been just so much better, but they have the draft capital. They've done a nice job of just loading up on draft picks, becoming a good young team, and taking shots in the draft, and they still have more to offer if there is a trade possibility. They have incredible speed now with Jaylen Waddle, the 1 year of Will Fuller, Devontae Parker at receiver, Mike Gesicki at tight end. You know, to me, that's how you win in the NFL, right? You get three, four, five guys that are just difficult to cover, and much like the Bucs did to go to the Super Bowl and win it last year, that's how you do it. So Miami's set up to win that way, and I think Denver's set up to win that way too. They drafted Jerry Jeudy. You've got KJ Hamler. Cortland Sutton's coming back off injury, and then I love Tim Patrick. For those teams that might need a receiver on the trading block, Tim Patrick's one of those guys they should probably be calling Denver about. But I think that fit is really good, too, because you have Vic Fangio, really good defensive coach. They've done a nice job rebuilding their roster. And I really just want to see Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes play twice a year, too. So I think Denver would be great. I think Miami also has the draft capital to make a move there. And from a Tua standpoint, I think teams should be interested in him, but that's absolutely a concern. You just don't see quarterbacks come out saying stuff like that or admitting that, and it's just not what you want to hear, and maybe you give him a slight pass.
He said he wasn't comfortable making checks at the line of scrimmage. He didn't know the playbook that well. Like, he admitted all that stuff. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you never hear that from a player. Maybe you feel that way as a player, but you never come out and like, never let them see a sweat, right? You never tell people what's going on really behind the scenes. I was blown away by it, man.
There might be a slight pass because of the COVID situation, and Tua is an interesting one because he plays fast. Like, he does play fast, but I also don't think he anticipates all that well. Even at Alabama, I think there was a lot of plays where he just waited for his guy to get open, and when he saw a guy open, he was really accurate. He could throw the ball where he wanted, even though his arm isn't the best. So that was always the slight concern for me. Like, he looks like Jimmy Garoppolo sometimes, fast, 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 but there's also plays where he's a little bit too slow going through his progressions, and we definitely saw some of that last year.
You know, back to Rodgers for just a minute here. I'm curious your thoughts on this, Steve. Do you feel like one party has more leverage than the other? Is it Rodgers? Is it the Packers? And how do you see it playing out? Like, could the Packers potentially make Rodgers do the whole Carson Palmer thing and retire and say, bleep you, we're not getting rid of you?
I debate this with my podcast partner all the time because he thinks the worst thing for the Packers would be Rodgers going somewhere else and winning Super Bowls. And I think the worst thing would be the Rodgers retiring because the Packers would get nothing in return for him. You know, I think Rodgers has the leverage because I think he's the type of guy that would retire if needed. I think that's the worst case scenario for the Packers. If they're not going to have Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, they better get two or three first rounders, you know, in return for him so they can at least, you know, rebuild the franchise and, you know, stay good and find who the next quarterback is if it's not Jordan Love. So I think it's Rodgers with the leverage. Also because last year he was incredible. You know, if this was maybe last year at this time where he was declining a little bit and wasn't as elite as he was previously, you know, maybe less so, but Rodgers showed last year he still has it and he'll be coveted if the Packers do end up putting him on the trading block.
Steve Palazzolo with us from Pro Football Focus. Steve, got to ask you, my partner is obsessed with Tim Tebow.
Love him.
It's driving me crazy. I'm so sick
of
hearing
my partner,
about it.
Steve, hates Tim Tebow. It's driving me crazy.
I mean, if I'm just sick of him getting handed jobs because he's Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with both on this. I love Tim Tebow, the guy, and all that stuff. By the way, I have a better AAA batting average than him. I hit .250 in AAA.
Nice.
That's right. I forgot you played.
Yeah. He only hit .163. But anyway, I used to say this about him as a quarterback. You know, he was never a good quarterback in the NFL and never looked like one and never projected like one. But in this situation in particular, too, the Jaguars don't have a great tight end situation. I just don't – I don't think it's a huge deal because I just don't think he makes the roster. I just don't see how he can do it. I don't see why you want a rookie 33, whatever he is, 33-year-old tight end who really has never done it. And even if Tebow moved to tight end 10 years ago, I don't think he had the skill set to really do much. He's not that much more athletic than other tight ends. You know, he's an average athlete for the position, and he's never done it before. There's other guys that are better. So I think it's going to be irrelevant soon.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm kind of in between on both of them.
But I don't know, man. I think they'll just give him –
they're not
going to
give him a roster spot, Bull.
I don't know,
no
man.
Way. They're too valuable,
Steve,
man.
Yesterday somebody was comparing him to Taysom Hill. He's not the athlete Taysom Hill is, right?
No. No, and I thought it was a good point today by, I think it was Ryan Clark, who said he played against him when he was doing all the Taysom Hill stuff for the Jets, and it didn't work. You need him to play every snap to have that to have some success, to get some consistency. And if he's going to come in there every other snap, or once every five series or something like that for a play or two, it's not going to work. He's too slow.
No, it's when the Jets did that years ago, it just felt like the biggest waste of time. You know,
right.
The Jets were just – they were like 3 years behind the curve. They started, we're going to run some wildcat. And, and then they spent a year and a half running the wildcat to set up one trick play that led to a 6-yard pass. It was just the whole thing. So if you start to use a Tebow, even the Taysom Hill stuff feels like a big waste of time to me when you had a Drew Brees, but that's a different story. So I don't see a path where he makes sense on the roster, but I also don't think it's egregious to give him, one of 90 roster spots just to, bring him into camp.
Agreed.
All right, but you'll agree that if they give him one of 53, it's egregious.
He's going to have to earn it.
I think that'd be a bad move.
Steve, if he makes the roster, you have to agree that he's going to have to earn that. They don't give roster spots away.
If there's a team that can make the roster, there are some teams that have terrible tight ends, by the way. The Jaguars are one of them. I'm writing about them right now. There's six or seven teams that are horrible. Tebow would have a shot there. He's got six or seven options. That's one of the teams. If he makes the team, it's because he's earned it, not just because he's Urban Meyer's boy.
Well, Brandon Jacobs wants to play defensive end, so maybe the Jaguars can sign him too.
Bring him in.
Yeah.
Do it.
Let's see what he's got. Steve, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.